Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. It's episode 22. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and with us as always, your host, the TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. Welcome back.
God.
There's crazy things happening.
It's crazy things everywhere. This is insanity. We'll have to go fast.
There's so much.
Fast forward my voice.
You know, back when you had the old TV Talk Machine when there was no information, the people who listen to that are going, their heads will explode in this
episode.
Their
heads will explode. How did you guys do an hour of not literally nothing?
Yeah.
And now an hour may not even contain
we got too much.
This show. Too much stuff.
Should we start with the Emmys? Because this is, for years now, we've all been complaining about how the Emmys categories don't make sense with how TV is made and that there are people nominated in the wrong categories and it all seems all messed up. And just as when I called you today, you're like, did you hear about the Emmys? And I hadn't heard. They totally changed the rules of the Emmys today, apparently.
They did. And it's, it's a step forward. Whether it's a step in the right direction, I don't know, because it's complicating things as much as it's fixing things, which is an issue that I have with it. I'll just run you through some of the major changes. The categories are going to expand from 6 to 7. That's helpful. It's not a fix. I would have rather seen it go to 10, like the Oscars. I think we're trying to acknowledge that there's a lot more television out there, but adding one per category is really stupid.
Right. And we talked about how many hours of programming there are these days. So there'll be 7 nominees per category now instead.
Right, but only in the comedy and drama series. I don't think that they're doing individual. I mean, maybe they'll be doing individual. It wasn't clear to me whether it was also going to go to the acting side. So there's so much to look for. And in fact, there's like, you really need to, be on the phone with these people to figure out, what they're trying to do.
So I know I brought this up last week when David Letterman dropped the name of my old TV blog that I did in the 90s.
Yes.
But when we did our awards, our stupid blog awards in the 90s, we called the categories the best half hour and the best hour show, because we felt like it was stupid to say comedy and drama because they were all mixed up. And the Emmys are doing that. They're keeping the labels, but they're saying, look, if you're longer than half an hour, you're a drama, which is kind of weird
because not really true.
Things have gotten so mixed up and strange in these categories that at least they're saying, look, you're either in the half hour category or you're in the hour category. And if you think you're mislabeled, you can beg us and maybe we'll listen to you. But it's our discretion, I think that's good, because we were getting these non-comedic parts nominated in comedy categories. But that may happen if there's a non-comedic half hour show.
Well, yeah, here's the problem. When you say a comedy is 30 minutes or less and a drama is an hour, then you're kind of really messing up shows like Orange is the New Black. At the same time, you're fixing stuff like Shameless, which was nominated for a comedy last year, and it's not a comedy. I mean, there's funny elements to it, but it's not a comedy. I mean, it's ridiculous. But then you're not for shows that are 30 minutes that are technically dramas. Then you're in trouble. I mean, Girls is still a comedy. There's still funny stuff in there. I would still put that in the comedy category, even though I think that there's elements of that are more drama. Something like Veep or Modern Family, clearly that's a half hour thing. But what do you do about like Transparent? I mean, I would not put Transparent in the comedy category. I just wouldn't. I think that's a drama.
Right.
And I think there's even something like Happiness, which just came out on HBO, which I like.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's – I think that's more drama than comedy, even though it's funny. Louie, okay, great. We know that that's a comedy because it's set up like a comedy. And yet at the same time, especially this last season, the stuff that he's talking about is dramatic stuff. And the things that they take under their wings and try to dissect, or he does, those are big issues.
I feel like they would be better off. I understand why they don't want to do it, but they'd be better off saying something like short form and long form or something like that. And
right.
Well, like at 45 minutes, you draw the line and say you can be short form or long form, and we're not going to even judge whether it's comedic or dramatic. It's just it's long or it's short, and let's just leave it at that. Because that's essentially what they're doing here, other than this petition thing where, if you really feel like your 30-minute show is a drama, you can go to them and say, look, this is a drama, and maybe they'll listen to you. But you can't just submit it as one. and right. And that's,
right. I mean, that's, boy, I mean, to me, that's where you're starting to get into really dicey category where you're going to have what they say, quote, five industry leaders appointed by the Television Academy chairman and four, they're going to be the ones who decide what category you go into. Who are these people?
Yeah.
And I mean, I joked earlier today on Twitter that I would be happy to tell the Emmy people, yeah, comedy, not a comedy. Comedy, not a comedy.
Yeah, you
well,
can
clearly
do
they've got somebody, they got a four or five people to do that. But, and so, okay, that's great. I mean, they're addressing it at least. The sure. part that's even more worrisome than that to me is the one where you can petition them to say, hey, you know, we really think we should be in this category. There's going to be some heavy, heavy influence
right.
going on behind the scenes on that one, I can tell you. And there'll be people say, well, wait, hey, you know, I mean, what is Shameless going to do? Are they going to say, hey, look, you put us in there last year, or you let us, so why don't you grandfather us in? I think if you there should be no grandfathering because that takes away the spirit of the correction that they made today. So I don't know. And the other big thing beyond splitting them into comedy and dramas is they fixed the they changed basically the miniseries and they called it limited series no more of this anthology stuff meaning the show like True Detective would have been in that group, Fargo's in that group, American Horror Story, right. They're all going to be in the limited series field, and I think that's the way to go for sure.
Yeah, this it looks like they've defined it as it's got to have two or more episodes. It's got to run more than 2.5 hours. It has to tell a complete non-recurring story, not have an ongoing storyline or characters that cross between seasons. So, you know, that's basically the American Horror Story or True Detective rule, which is if you have a, you know, an anthology that changes every season, it's a limited series.
Right.
Or Fargo, right?
Right.
Yeah.
and that's fine. I think that was done right. Some of the other problems I think are, I mean, well, they did fix the, I mean, it's, for some people this is minor. It's the guest casting one. So if you appear in more than 50% of the show's total episode run, you are no longer a guest star. But that did have some kind of tricky things, you know. You had Robert Morse from Mad Men would have been affected by that. So, yeah, there's a lot to dissect here. I do think that it's a step in the right direction, but really not going all the way. And one of the things that that hasn't got a lot of attention in this is that these are big, you know, these are the big headlines clearly. But one of the things that is perhaps more important long term. Is that they changed who could vote in the final vote? So, you know, there's a group that nominates what categories and how many will be in, and then they were not allowed to be vote in the finals. Now everybody can vote for anything. So that I think is going to open up the vote total, and that could change how we see it. So
that changed. I mean, you change who's voting, and that changes the dynamic of.
Yeah, that changes voting blocks, and you know, it's funny because I think one of the rules is like you have to just basically acknowledge that you've actually watched it, and that you'll watch all the ones in the category, all the episodes submitted. You don't have to watch the whole season because that's not how it's done. Which I wish it would be, but that's the dream scenario. Instead, it's like if you nominate three or four episodes, or how many you're nominated. If you're a voter, you have to watch all of them if you're going to decide that you're going to vote in that category, which is basically it taking people at their, you know, at face value. Which of course it's people in Hollywood. They're going to lie. They're not going to watch.
I think they split the talk shows and the sketch shows out of the variety category, which seems like a reasonable thing, that a sketch show and a talk show are very different beasts, and they're basically saying yes, they should have their own categories.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that was the right thing to do. I think the problem there comes from the fact that they made all this involved in that same decision was they're going to have the Daily Show, Tonight Show. Those people are going to be on the live program, and the sketch shows like Key and Peele,
right.
Who I love, and Saturday Night Live. They're not.
They're on the Creative Arts Show.
They're going to be a Creative Arts Show, which it kind of sucks, especially for Key and Peele.
Yeah,
it's a big pushback. But hey, look, they took some chances today. I think that they for me, the only the positive I take out of this is they're acknowledging there's a problem.
Yeah.
And maybe next year they come and they say, hey, look, we did one year of trying to fix it. We looked how it went and we realized we didn't go far enough. Let's fix it more. That's my take on it. I hope they do that because they did not go far enough
right
this time.
Sounds good to me. I hope they do revise it. I feel like they should change the acting categories to be sort of instead of in a dramatic series, they should make it in a dramatic role. Because this is the Nurse Jackie problem, right?
Oh,
where
yes.
It's like right now you could even if you say that Nurse Jackie is a comedic drama or a, you know, whatever, that part is not a comedic part, and you know that would be a way to define it as the role. Is this a comedic role or a dramatic role? And then they would be separate from what
that's actually smart.
What show category they're in? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I like that because there are. As much as I hate to admit it, there are comedy elements on Nurse Jackie.
Yeah.
It's just that Edie Falco is not one of them.
Not a comedic actress, no.
So that's no. smart. That's
it's
a good
not
idea.
That she's bad. It's just that she's not a comedic actress. That's not why right. you – why the good job she does is not about comedy. But yeah.
Right. I still think that defining whether a show is a comedy or drama by that the how long it runs, the minutes in this – that's I think that's dumb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see that they made an attempt to do it, but so essentially what's going to happen now is Jane the Virgin is going to go against Game of Thrones.
Oh my God. Yeah, that is
so
a problem.
That's not right. Yeah, that's not
that,
right.
That is a problem. Because you know, that's one of those cases where I would say I would petition as Jane the Virgin's producers. I would petition to be in the comedy category. I think that's a comedy. I think that's an hour long soap opera, but it is intended to be comedic and it, you know, it's got some dramatic elements and we've talked about it, but come on, that's,
well, that's
fine. It's fine.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I hope that they can petition it. I think it's still really iffy about what you can petition and what you're going to get away with. We won't know until the next time the Emmys come up and we see what happens. But anyway, it's a start.
It is. I like you said, I like that they are acknowledging that television, I mean, let's be honest here, television has changed and the categories need to adjust and things are not in those slots of 30-minute comedy, hour-long drama, miniseries or, you know, this kind of thing. Things have gotten all mixed up. So I like that they're trying to make an effort to, you know,
I do too.
React.
Finally, right? Way to wake up, old people.
Yeah.
Good work.
Woo!
Woohoo!
Good job, Academy. The Academy, the Television Academy, is where you go to learn to television, right? That's like you.
Well, it's let's
like
not
college
kid ourselves.
Of television.
It's arts and sciences, right? This is highbrow
right,
stuff.
Fair
Jason.
Enough.
Yeah, it's arts.
You
and
can
stuff.
Major. You can at the Television Academy. You can major in arts. You can major in sciences.
It's a well-rounded,
And then you end up knowing how to television at the end, so it's good.
Gotta love that, right? The Academy, it's ATAS, the Academy of television arts and sciences.
Yeah,
that's dumbassery. There is no science in television, none. Okay, moving on.
You wrote a couple reviews this week.
I did.
House of Cards season 3.
Mm.
Oh, man, you sound like a beaten man.
Yeah, I am beaten in so many ways. So many ways. Well, look, here's the thing. I think that the initial episodes that I saw, and I saw 3,
mm-hmm.
Which to me was enough. Look, my take on it was I thought it was a very good first year, very strong first season. I thought it was a very weak second season, which mm-hmm. pointed out all the problems, which was Frank and Claire Underwood have a bunch of paper tigers against them. He comes out, he wins all the time and she wins all the time because they're smarter than everybody. And everybody who's supposed to be a political operative in Washington is basically just a gigantic dumbass. And in the end, you know, Frank got the best of them. And it happened time and time and time again. And that's just not how it works. I mean, that's just not, I mean, there's smart people on both sides of the aisle and different jobs and he would have never won all those things. So, okay. So now you say, okay, nobody would have won all those. So, that's the problem of the second season, the sort of straw man argument. And then he becomes president and she's first lady and they got where they wanted to go. But now they need to hold on to the power. And season 3 is about keeping that power. And what I liked about the early episodes, and this is my caveat, what I liked about the early episodes is the Underwoods. So Frank and Claire run up against some real defeats. and their situation looks a little bit bleak. And I like that. I think that's what the show needs. However, I'm not convinced that House of Cards is going to change its DNA like that. I just think they're setting you up for the gigantic comeback at the end of the season when the Underwoods will prove victorious once again. So I cannot see the season. Who knows how it ends? I mean, maybe it ends and there is an election, but I don't think that there's going to have the election in this season. They might, but I don't see them in either case, whether it's this season or next season, losing the White House. I think that that's maybe the series is over at that point.
Hmm.
So they'll win, and them winning all the time is the problem of the series.
I think it's okay if they stay in office, but having real challenges and getting wounded and having some drama that's not just the good guy always wins, or in this case, not a good guy, but the protagonist always wins in the end and is always outclassing everybody else. It does get kind of boring after
that.
That
is a good caveat. He is not a good guy.
He's
the president of the United States, and he's killed people.
Yep. Imagine there's some TV executive from the 1960s who gets teleported to the present day and goes, what?
Exactly.
What happened?
Can't do that.
Amazing.
What? Cartman's mom. What?
Yeah. You also reviewed, and I'm going to wait for your noises for this one, The Odd Couple. more begging for death. How is Matthew Perry, our old friend?
You know what? Look, I think people... Oh, I have such mixed feelings about this. I'm mad at other critics, because they jumped all over it, right? And they're like, well, that's the worst thing in the whole world. And I was like, you know what? You got just what I got. You got 22 minutes of the pilot.
Right.
No idea. No one has any fucking idea what's going to happen to this. Now we're explicit again.
Yep.
Sorry. Put the little button on there. Press it.
I will. I just checked the box.
Just check the box. Nobody knows what the hell is going to happen to this show. It's CBS's fault for only sending out one episode. I mean, you can make the argument, do we need a remake? No. But, like, who cares? That's a stupid argument. Can they make it work? Thomas Lennon is really good. I like him in that role. I think that a little bit more, seeing a little bit more of him, he'll be good. Matthew Perry could be fine as Oscar Madison as they go forward. Whether we need the show or not, it's already here. That's kind of a crazy argument. It's already here. It's in your face. But I'm not going to say it's the worst series in the whole world, because they didn't give me enough episodes to do it. So that's part of it. But I will say that the 22 minutes that they gave me was not very funny. So, I mean, I could see that there was potential down the line, because there's a lot of really creative people involved in it. But right now, the 22 episode pilot that they gave wasn't that funny. So. Yeah. And you know what? Let's be honest. I'm not going to watch that show.
Hey, but it's CBS. I mean, they could craft that thing, get some sandpaper out, and craft that thing into a little joke machine that lasts for 8 years. It can
absolutely
happen.
They'll be all over that, and it'll be fine. It'll be fine. You know what? There'll be worse. There's so many worse shows on CBS to talk about. I'm not gonna like bleed myself over this one. So I'd be happy for them. I like the people that are involved. I like Thomas Lennon a lot. So.
Yeah, there's some nice people in that cast, too.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, you got Wendell Pierce, you got Bunk. Who doesn't want Bunk to have
him?
Right?
Yeah, you got Dave Foley in there.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You got Shirley from Community in there. I mean,
right.
You got Nicole Brown, right?
Yeah. Why don't we want, let's let Shirley get another hit. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But as long as we don't have to watch it.
Somebody else can watch it.
Hey,
just let it be a hit.
Speaking of CBS sitcoms... 2.5 Men, which I read today, is the longest running multi-camera sitcom in history by seasons.
Mm-hmm. Our great national nightmare is over.
That was like getting punched in the stomach when I read that. It's over.
It's over. And you know what? I did not watch it because I was never going to watch it.
We're going to write an appreciation for the Hollywood Reporter of then it's gone.
Can you imagine?
Oh,
I'm gonna write one for Community. I mean, for Parks and Recreation.
Sure.
I'm not going to do one for Community, which is coming back, by the way.
You can't write an appreciation for it because it just won't die.
It will not die. It is the Jason of not you.
Yeah, 12 seasons of 2.5 Men, 262 episodes.
Brutal. How do you survive that?
I thought, according to Jim, lasted a long time.
Right. That is the one-two punch of that's your American Horror Story right there. my friend. Those two series.
That's 20 seasons put together. Oh,
20 seasons of hackery. Just dick joke upon stupid ass joke upon whatever. Good riddance to all of them. I don't care.
It sounds to me like I read a story about the Two and a Half Men finale, and it sounded to me like it was like an extended middle finger to everyone from Chuck Lorre. That was like literally they're looking at the camera. They completely break through the fourth wall, and at the end they I think what they said is. It was essentially like a murder-suicide because they have a double for Charlie Sheen and drop a piano on him. And then they cut back to Chuck Lorre and they drop a piano on him. The end. I was like, what?
So it was,
we don't even care.
I did read that too. I mean, I thank God I didn't have to watch it, but I did read it to figure out what they did. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy I didn't watch that. I'm so happy I didn't spend my time watching Chuck Lorre be vindictive about Charlie Sheen. So, I mean, who cares? I mean, both of them I'm not interested in. And I don't really like any other Chuck Lorre shows, so even though some of them are better. I know that Big Bang Theory is people like that, and people like Mom for some reason, but I'm not going to give Mom another shot. So
I'll put Todd Vanderwerf's piece from Vox in the show notes. Where
there you go.
He watched it, so we didn't have to. Thanks.
Okay. Good.
Thanks, Todd.
Good, Todd. Way to take one for the team.
Parks and Rec. You mentioned them. The next week, it's over for Parks and Rec.
Yeah, and it is sad, and I think that. I think there's a bigger story here somewhere, which I'm kind of grasping at doing. I'm going to do an appreciation of it because they were amazing at what they did. Such a good show. You can put this as a test. I mean, there's other series that would fall under this category too, but you can put this one as kind of a test case because, as we said last week, the first six episodes, which were the entirety of the first season, were not very funny. No. I mean, maybe the sixth one was kind of there. I've seen it before and they were kind of getting there. It just wasn't that funny, and it was kind of a failure. Didn't look like it was going to come back. Comes back in the second season, and it is from the go, from jump, as they say, really great. And they just found their rhythm, and the show became so funny and so essential to watch, along with 30 Rock. And I just love it. I'm going to miss it. The characters are – there's so many great characters in that show, and there's a sweetness to it without being schmaltzy. It's ridiculous. It's hilarious. There's so much we got from that show. But I think there's something to it about how it was just never really a hit when it was on ever. So can we launch funny niche comedies in this country that don't have to be Two and a Half Men? That's the story.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at what Mike Schur and Dan Gore did, who are, you know, the guys who ran Parks and Rec, and they went and launched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a great show. But again, I feel like like Parks and Rec is probably, I think it's the funniest network show right now. But it's, you know, it's not a huge hit for Fox.
Right. It's not. It's good, but it's not a huge hit.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe that's the fate of these kinds of shows, is that we should be glad that they kick around for a while because people like them, but they're not the CBS hits. They're these, you know, little eclectic. I mean, the direct line here is The Office to Parks and Rec to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. These are a lot of the same people. Mike Schur created Parks and Rec with Greg Daniels because Mike Schur was a producer with Greg Daniels on The Office. And then Mike Schur went and created Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Dan Gore, who was one of his producers from Parks and Rec. So it's like this little chain of people doing really great shows that are not ever going to be huge breakout hits, but are really liked.
Well, and then, you know, this topic is relevant because on March 6th, Netflix is going to have Tina Fey's new comedy, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which was supposed to be made by NBC Studios. It was supposed to be on NBC, and they kept putting it off because they didn't know what to do with it. And then ultimately they ended up saying, we don't think we can launch this and make it big because it doesn't have enough comedies around it. And so they gave up on it, and they made the studio will make money if it's on the Netflix deal. But as I've said before, I mean, if NBC can't launch a Tina Fey comedy, it's in trouble.
That's, I mean, it's so bizarre in the sense too that they You know, the show went from being, let's hope that it can be launched on NBC, to we just moved it to Netflix and sold them a whole other year of it on top of it, which is just kind of crazy. But you're right. I mean, not only does it have Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, the people who did 30 Rock behind the scenes, it's got Ellie Kemper from The Office and Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock. I mean, this is not an obscure, you know, this isn't Arrested Development, right? This would seem like a straight on network comedy, right? And just they gave up.
Well, like if your network, if your comedy development department at your network is working, functioning, you know, if it's working, then you can launch the show. But NBC's is not working.
Yeah, what's on NBC?
It's nothing, and so it can't launch this show. So that's a problem. Yeah. Because if you look over at ABC, they launched Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah,
it's. You know, listen, I know that Empire is getting all the people who are wonky about ratings. Empire is done something like no other TV show has done. It's grown like every week. It's crazy. Usually there's a 15% drop in the second week, and it went way up, and it's continued to go up every week that it's on. But miracle of miracles, they ran Fresh Off the Boat in the coveted Wednesday slots, because ABC's Wednesday night with Modern Family and stuff, it's just a strong night. So it got really good ratings. Then they moved it to Tuesday to start the night off, and it was literally like an island. Although I wrote that I thought it would do well because there wasn't too much comedy. There was really no other good comedy competition at 8 o'clock. And they ran back-to-back episodes, and they did great. And then they went, you know, so another one came out, and they've grown 2 weeks in a row in the Tuesday slot, which is, to me, that's kind of amazing. And to everybody else who follows ratings, they're like, wait, you did really well on Tuesday by yourself with no lead in. And then the second week, you beat those numbers. So you're growing again. So people have taken to it, which is great because, you know, I love that. I love that show so much.
So, you know, ABC is doing it. Fox is doing okay. CBS obviously is a comedy machine. And then NBC is like, we got nothing. We can't even put this with something. So we give up.
Yeah, we've got our dicks in our hands. That's what they're saying.
I already checked the box, Tim. It's fine. We're all explicit all the time. I read somebody complaining about the fact that Parks and Rec's final season has been, you know, they called it a burn off where they're running two episodes back to back. I don't think, I mean, back in the old days they would do that, right? Like the last four episodes of Arrested Development that ran consecutively against the Olympics opening ceremonies. I mean, that was a burn off. But this, I'm like thinking to myself, what show does NBC have better to pair Parks and Recreation with at this point than another episode of Parks and Recreation? I mean, I kind of am okay with them rolling it out in half the time in these hour-long blocks to say goodbye, because what else do they have?
Well, it's also an argument that doesn't make any sense. People, the reason you get upset about a burn-off is if no one knows about it, they burn it off in the summer. Well, everybody who's a Parks and Rec fan knows it's on. Yeah. They're watching it. People who complain about burn-offs are worried about ratings. The ratings don't matter. This show's over. It can pull in a 0.1 if it wants to. It's all of them are going to run. If you're a fan, you're going to get them. That's all you want.
And they'll all be on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not your money. No, who cares, right? Okay. It'll let it go onto Netflix. So I think you're right. I think burning them off, as they say, in the double episode is just fine. It's just like, let's pair them together, because you're right. NBC doesn't have anything else to put it next to. And come on, seriously, back-to-back is kind of nice.
Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all over next week, so we'll have to appreciate, you know, Ron Swanson. And I like this I've liked this go into the future thing that they've done. I feel like it's allowed them to try every wacky idea that they just couldn't get around to because it would have changed the storyline too much. And they've been able to just sort of plot it out where in these last 13 episodes, they could tell every story about personal developments and, you know, make some jokes about the future of technology, which I thought was really funny. I felt like they're running all cylinders. It's been a masterful kind of final season. They've tried every kind of, they did the kids show episode last week, with Johnny Karate. And, it's good. So I'm looking forward to the finale, and it'll be sad that it's over, but you know, it's hard for me to get sad when a show you like that was never really super appreciated gets six seasons and gets a chance to go out on its own terms. I mean, I don't know. It feels more like a graduation than something to be upset about.
Absolutely. And I think that, this format is very freeing to the writers, obviously. Oh, yeah. Based on what we're getting from them, it's clear that it's great. It's just freed them up to do whatever they wanted to. I think the cast loves it. And nothing can last forever. Everybody's these guys, you know, Chris Pratt's now a movie star. So yeah. All this stuff, it was just going to happen. And if you look around, like, yeah, Parks and Rec goes, but, you know, in comes Fresh Off the Boat in Black-ish. And mm-hmm. now you're going to have, you know, you've got Man Seeking Woman over on FX. You've got Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt coming up. And I've already seen, I haven't written about it yet, but I've already seen Last Man on Earth. And I loved that. Hmm. So there's a lot coming up that's
lots
good
of stuff. And presumably, I mean, not only are they going to keep doing Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I would imagine that these producers are going to, you know, have some pilots. That,
oh, you know, absolutely.
Lead
yeah,
to I something mean, else. Mike exactly. Sure will pop up somewhere else with another one. So
yeah, and you've got, you know, Bob's Burgers and
oh yeah,
Brooklyn
so
Nine-Nine,
much
so much good stuff. Yeah, it's we're yeah. good. We're good on the comedy front. Yeah.
But well, job well done, Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
From unlikely bad first season, like The Office, exactly like The Office.
Exactly, right? It's hung in there.
They turned it around. Well, Tim, Sunday is the Oscars.
Yes. I don't know why I'm cackling deviously. I have no idea. I will say
you,
this.
They make you watch the Oscars, don't they?
Well, this year they're not. Yes. I put in a request to my boss that went a little bit like this. My editor, not my boss. I put it in and said, hey, I haven't seen any of the movies. How do you think that would play as I reviewed it? and so we decided, yeah, you know, because it's like there's too much TV.
Yeah.
And I was – it's kind of a way also to say, hey, remember when I wrote that story from Press Tour about the – how many 1,715 shows on TV and 352 scripted series? Yes. The fallout from that is I don't get to go to movies in my quote, air quote, free time. So I pitched that like, look, can somebody else do it? And, you know, really the only show I should be doing is the Emmys anyway. I think that. And I went back and I did a little research and I of my 4 years, 4 years at THR, I have hated every single Oscars. I looked up the reviews. I've panned all of them.
Sure.
Except 1 year, I was like, meh. That's what I said. Meh.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know what? That was the year that Seth MacFarlane was host and everybody hated him. And I was like, you know what? He wasn't that bad. I didn't really like him. I mean, it didn't really bother me. I thought, well, at least he's something different.
Yeah.
But I was clearly on an island on that one. So my thing was, look, hey guys, I haven't liked it for 4 years. What are the odds that I like it this year, having not seen any movies? So we have somebody else doing it. Woohoo!
You win. It's not a good show.
No, I mean it's for, you know, I'm not afraid to be redundant. So let's do it. But my rant on these award shows is they're poorly paced.
Mm-hmm.
They have too much stuff in there, and my biggest complaint of all time. They rush the front. They give you all this great stuff at the front, like supporting actor categories, et cetera. And then they have this gigantic bloated midsection, which makes the end be one gigantic rush to the finish, where people you actually wanted to see in the movies that you wanted to be awarded are played off the stage.
Right.
And how is that not fixed every year? It's like so redundant. Like every year, the same thing happens.
Yeah. Last year or the year before, there was actually a montage that was like a salute to clips from movies. It was like literally had no theme.
No theme.
That was
yeah.
detectable. It was like, hey, these are cool things from movies. And
these things happened in movies. Let's put it on the show.
I don't know.
No, there needs to be like a bloat detector.
I like Neil Patrick Harris, but you know, I like a lot of these hosts, and the host bit at the beginning is often just fine. And it's that saggy midsection, like you were saying, where it's just, you know, now, you know, we got you excited by doing some good stuff up front. Now you're going to take your medicine. And
right.
that's when you – it's a good thing to DVR. I'll put it that way. It's a good show to DVR.
Yeah, fast forward through it. Although mm-hmm. it's live and people get to like to talk about live stuff on Twitter, whatnot.
That's true. You miss the snark on Twitter if you DVR it. But if you're on the West Coast, just, you know, wait until 8 o'clock. Don't read Twitter and you can blast through it in 90 minutes.
Exactly. So I may be out of the movies that night. I may be out like seeing something. Mm-hmm.
Ironically enough.
Yeah. Why not?
Good for you. You want to do some listener questions? We got a couple of listener questions.
Oh, God. Only if they have the area code.
Okay, well, we have one that's very short. It's from Twitter, and so it's from Twitter user Jackson Pants. And he's got Pants in his name, so that's pretty good. But he didn't sign it with an area code. Jackson Pants.
So who must – I don't know.
From the area code of Twitter, the 000. Right. Though, no, it would be the 140.
The cranky pants.
From the 140. 140 characters on Twitter.
From the 140.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I like it.
Anything to say about Banshee? I keep watching, but I can't tell if I'm enjoying it or fascinated by it.
Oh, yeah. I'm remiss. Again, this falls under the too much television. I love Banshee. Oh. Banshee's amazing. It is crazy. You can put it under like a guilty pleasure.
This is a Cinemax, if you want. Right?
It's Cinemax, and it was like one of Cinemax's first new shows as they were becoming an original content person. I mean, I love it because it's high action, and it's got a lot of the craziest fight scenes ever, and it's action packed and weird and actually well written, and it'll never be considered in the like upper tier of like, you know, I don't know, Mad Men, et cetera, et cetera. But we need shows like this. And there's plenty of – look, I watch enough like stuff that's like Blacklist, which is guilty pleasure for me. I like it. I don't expect it to be anything more than it is. Whereas Banshee basically takes that and really ups the ante and has naked people having sex and shit blows up and people punch each other in the face. And who doesn't want that? I'm all over that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, there you go, Jackson Pants.
Sex and violence, yes, Jackson Pants.
The answer is you are enjoying it.
From Mr. Cranky Pants comes the positive review. Mm-hmm.
All right, we got another one here from a it's Brian in the 209.
Which Stockton?
That's where I grew up in the 209.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is interesting. He says, I've been pondering for roughly 20 weeks what feedback to send you from the 209. The perfect question had almost formed itself in my mind when last week you jumped the gun by carrying on a discussion about the 209 without having any feedback from anyone currently residing there. I can only imagine that Tim's disillusionment with Sons of Anarchy has affected his view of the whole area code. Hillbillies indeed. Thank goodness we have Dallas Braden. See? Yeah, that's right. So here's the actual feedback. Shout Factory TV has begun a free streaming service featuring old series that are not available on the big streaming players. Lately, they've featured Father Knows Best, Route 66, The Time Tunnel, and lots of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So here's my question. What long past series that is not already available on Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu Plus would you like to have available for streaming? Something from the archives. That's Brian from the 209. Woohoo, 209. What do you think?
Wow.
Something old that you'd like to see pulled out of mothballs and put on
streaming? Sure. How about, I don't think anybody's like streaming Night Stalker. I would love that. Banachek, Night Stalker, all those like cool like late night shows when I was growing up, I watched those. It scared the hell out of me. Banachek didn't, but you know, it was
Kolchak is on Netflix, believe it or not.
Is it really?
Yeah,
see, I don't know. Well, look at that. That kind of shoots that. Yeah,
but Banachek's not.
Right in the ass.
Mannix, your favorite. Mannix, not
on. Oh, my God. Mannix would be great, right? That was my...
You know, for years, Magnum P.I. wasn't on Netflix, show. And it is now. And I loved Magnum P.I., and it is now on Netflix. You can watch all of those. But
see, I guess I watched bits of that, but I was never a big fan of that.
Oh, I love that one.
I don't like facial hair.
You know, I hear you, but Hawaii is good.
Hawaii part is nice.
I'm going to throw out WKRP, and one of the reasons it's not on streaming is because the music rights were absolutely insane, and they finally have the DVD set, which has... But now, I mean, because I think did they shoot that on film? I want to see them do it upright in HD, but the problem is it's just... That show is just way too expensive because of all the music rights. So there is a DVD that's got most, but not all of the music on it. Mm. But I think they can't do... streaming. And Shout Factory I think did that. I don't know if it's on their thing or not, but that's a great show that you really need to watch with the music, and some of that stuff's on YouTube and all, but that would be great if that was on Netflix or Amazon with the original music.
Yeah, that new Shout Factory platform is interesting. I mean, there's I don't think it's gonna, well, I mean, it may make a name for itself. Like I'm also a big fan of Acorn, if people are familiar with that. Acorn is basically, they own the rights to all the Poirot and all the great PBS shows. a lot of British dramas, ones that you've seen on PBS but don't see anywhere else. There are, and you know, a lot of those are available only on Acorn now. So that's a good streaming service for people who want that kind of detective series and just good old British and Australian series.
Yeah, Shadow Factory's got it's Gary Shandling's show. It's got Home Movies, New Heart.
Oh, Home Movies. I was a huge fan of Home Movies, yeah. But I own Home Movies on DVD. That was great. That was Squiggle Vision. And that is also our good friend H. John Benjamin from Archer.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, yeah, Acorn TV with the British on demand. Look at that.
Yeah, it's really right. British on demand.
Those will be in the show notes, which you can get to at theincomparable.com/TVTM/22.
Wow.
Or in your podcast app, probably if you touch a button or scroll or something, you'll see the show notes there too. Anyway, Brian from the 209, hope that helped.
Hope that helped, yeah. And by the way, what is Modesto? What is that?
209.
Okay, now Modesto, I feel like I'm a radio host now. Modesto, a little shout out to you, a little late night shout out to you.
Yep.
There's a series coming up on ABC in March called American Crime, which I just reviewed. It's going to be in the magazine soon. It's really good and it's epic. It's like a big swing from ABC and it takes place in Modesto.
Amazing.
And they shot a lot of exterior shots in Modesto. I hate to break this to the Modestoites, if that's how you call them.
Modestoins.
Yeah. They actually filmed the rest of it in Texas and Austin because California has crappy tax rebates
and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's a really interesting series. We'll see how it works. But Modesto, front and center.
Nice.
Coming up in the 209.
From the 209, that's right. Don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one more. It is from Chris in the 412.
Mm, no idea, unless that's Texas.
That is Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow. Okay, now we have issues because of the Super Bowl championships.
I know. We don't want to talk about that. Joe Garofoli no longer on the show.
Yeah.
Once the Steelers won another Super Bowl, he was
he was banned. Once it became Sixburg, yep. Forget it.
Nope. Yep. Gone. Anyway, Chris from the 412 says, you mentioned on a previous episode of TVTM that there were very few American spy shows on TV. So I wonder what you thought of Covert Affairs. I understand it is now canceled, but it seemed to be a fairly decent, if somewhat derivative, spy series. Additionally, I'd love to hear your thoughts on other TNT, TBS, USA shows. Based on my perception that you don't talk about them much, my guess is that you don't have high opinions. Are any of them worth seeking out, and is there any reason you don't talk about them much? Thanks for the great show, Chris in the 412.
Oh, Chris, that's actually a good question. I actually, you know what? What is Covert Affairs, right? Is that what it was?
Covert Affairs, yeah.
Covert Affairs, yeah. That I did review that, I remember, and I thought it was okay. It was good. It falls into that category of meh. I mean, that's those channels, USA, TNT, and
TBS.
TBS, those were all kind of the blue sky programming, and it got that nickname. It was like network quality shows that could do a little bit more than a network. Took a few more chances, but we're really just network television on cable.
Right.
And they got the idea of blue sky. Everything was like, it was all upbeat, right? There was no darkness to it at all.
Like Monk, right?
Exactly. I mean, Monk was a perfect example of that. So there were so many of them.
Psych.
Yes, so many of them. And even the ones that are more dramatic and that have cops in them,
yeah.
They're still not dark.
I heard basically. That I have some friends who really loved Burn Notice.
Yeah, Burn Notice is great. No, I'm a fan of Burn Notice.
That was
so
the USA.
Yeah, that's Matt Nick. So I'm a fan of that. That was good. That to me was probably the best
that's
example
pinnacle,
of
yeah.
a good blue sky series that was entertaining. So.
All right, so they're not. I guess that's what you're saying is they're not particularly offensive. They're fine. Some of them are better than others. If you don't talk about them a lot, it's often because they're not up in that like that top tier or the bottom tier. They're just kind of
exactly.
floating.
They're
in
somewhere
middle.
in the middle to upper middle. They're upper middle class shows.
Is there a chance that I mean is that working for them or do they suffer from not having those breakout hits that you get on the FXs and AMCs of the world?
Well, that's actually an interesting question because, you know, so like they do all these shows like Rizzoli and Isles. That's another
right.
blue sky one. So they're basically network shows, but they're doing really well. And they actually have a format now where they're actually producing these shows not a fraction, but less than the networks are doing. So they're, whatever format they're using, they're because they're not stuck in the old rut of this, you know, machine age that the broadcast networks are. They're producing these shows at a cost benefit for them, so they can make more of them. Do they want to shift? Yes, actually they do. TNT really does want to go darker. Unfortunately, why would you do that?
Well, they had the closer, right, mm-hmm. which had a little bit more of that edge, and they tried to roll that over with Major Crimes. So that was an example of TNT trying to add a little edge, although they also have The Librarians, which doesn't have any edge at all. So,
well, yeah, they're conflicted. This is we could do a master class on this part. This is, if you're a branding person or if you're trying to make people understand your brand and your network, and you kind of have to do that. TNT already has a brand. They are a blue sky network.
Right.
They want to go darker, and the reason they want to go darker is they want to be considered for Emmys, and they want to be in the Twitter discussion among TV critics and people who like, you know, high end, top tier programming. They want to be in that discussion, and they're not. And Kevin Riley, who ran, who was at FX first and then went to Fox and was there forever. Well, he's at NBC too. And then back to Fox. So he's there. He's a bright mind. And in his dreams, he would really like to turn that into FX. Really would. But why would you? Because every time you put out like one of these shows, you're like, yeah, we're going to make this one because it's already in the pipeline. And all of a sudden it comes out and it does really well in the ratings because you're serving your brand. So they'd be kind of stupid to change it now.
Right. I mean, they're running Castle and Bones. And doing, and doing great with those, and
exactly right.
And then they got your Rizzoli and Isles, and your Librarians. So
yeah, you know, those are good shows.
Isn't that funny how though that you're running a business and it's doing well, but you don't. It's not cool, right? It's not acclaimed. Cool. You don't get the awards, and that's that push and pull that I think leads some people astray, right? Where they're like, I really want something cool and edgy, but you could like bring the whole house down around you if you did that. Because TNT is if it's motoring on with this stuff, but I totally get the desire to do that. It's like, God, it would be really nice if we could get something up there on stage at the Emmys, even if your business is great.
Right. Well, you know, for the longest time, Broadcast Network would say, oh, okay, great. All you critics, you love Sopranos, you love Mad Men, you love all these cable shows. We'll take our 25 million viewers and we'll see you later. We'll take it. It doesn't matter. Well, now, you know, outside of a few shows, they're not getting those ratings at all. So they're trying to get back into the like, oh, well, maybe if we make something a little more grown up and mature, we'll either get in the discussion or, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll become a hit and get talked about. You kind of look this day and age in the industry, and I've said this before, you have to be noticed. People have to be talking about you. If they're not talking about you, you're missing. You're lost. So it's like Manhattan on WGN.
Yeah, right.
Right, and people want to talk about it. You had it made people go find it. They still have a struggle to come out and get known, but you have to be. Somebody has to find you. If they don't find you, you're going to be Fortitude. Remember?
Yep.
Fortitude.
Exactly.
No one's talking about that anymore.
That was Pivot, right?
Pivot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meanwhile, not to get on. This is like the drinking game of the TVTN. TVTM. Not to mention BBC America again. But you know, my family went in over the weekend to Barnes & Noble, and there was a whole table full of like Doctor Who stuff. I'm like, you know what? That's the thing. That's how you get noticed. If you can get into like merchandising, if you can get into the public eye somehow, it makes that connection. And that's the challenge for some channel that's on the periphery. It's hard to do that.
Well, here's another thing that's kind of interesting. So, you know, that AMC bought into BBC America, right? They bought 49% interest. So that's, to me, that's really interesting, right? So because they wanted it. They wanted into it. And so what's going to happen now is when, I think it's April, I could be wrong. I'll double check. But when Orphan Black is coming out, they're going to run that on every single platform, every platform that AMC channels own. So AMC, BBC America, it's going to be on Wii Channel. It's going to be on all these random stuff that they own. It'll be out there. Cool.
Wow.
I think they own Lifetime, so maybe it's on Lifetime. Yeah.
Who'd they buy it from? They buy it from Discovery. Who had that part?
Who owned that 49%? Yeah, that I don't know.
Yeah.
That was, yes, too much work, Jason. I put a link
in the show notes to a Bloomberg news story that explains that it was purchased. So there you go.
Oh, good. Yeah. Let Bloomberg figure it out. Yeah. My guess is that it was owned by BBC.
BBC Worldwide? Uh-huh. I thought they had it was like a half and half deal, but maybe not. Maybe they only had Discovery Network selling the ads and it was actually wholly owned by BBC Worldwide, in which case they're now playing halfsies with AMC. That's good for them.
Yeah, it's good business, I think. So, but again, I think this podcast has so much information. I can't add anymore. I can't add like business talk.
No, that Orphan Black tidbit's good though.
Thank you.
That's
I'm there for you.
I appreciate it. Okay, well, let's recharge, not watch the Oscars, get ready to go, and we'll come back here next week and talk about who knows what crazy thing will happen in the meantime.
Well, there's a lot of more shows coming, so we'll talk about the Oscars, how they went.
Sure.
Maybe I'll see a movie. We'll talk about that.
Weepy farewells to Parks and Rec again.
Weepy farewells. And again, there's new stuff coming. March, right around the corner. March has got a lot of stuff coming out. At the beginning of March.
We'll have to cover that. Well, next week we'll be at the precipice of March, so maybe we'll start getting into it then. But for now, if you're still listening out there, I hope that you have kept the swelling in your head down because it almost exploded with information. So close.
We did actually a magnificent job of not going too much on the Emmy stuff because it's confusing.
Well, there are many months. You know, the nominations will come out and we'll be like, what? Oh, it's totally different. And
this is stupid.
It'll keep coming back.
That's what we'll do.
All right, Tim. Well, let's wrap up. Number 22. It's in the bag. We did
excellent.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening. You can reach us by tweeting us at TVTM, sending an email to podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/TVTalkMachine, or you can tweet us directly. I am Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. That's it. Tim, pleasure as always. Talk to you next week.
Definitely. See you then.